Production.
Hey there, movie kings and queens, and welcome to episode 12 of the Real Gay Movie Show. I'm your host, Mike Lovins, and with me, as always, is my number one ranked co-host, Ryan Provost.
I moved up to one?
You have moved up, my friend.
Oh my gosh, that's outstanding.
Isn't that awesome?
That's great news.
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you. Thanks to the Academy for making this possible.
Speech. No speech. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm great. How are you, Mike?
I'm good.
Awesome.
Hey, so this week we're doing something a little special. No new movie review this week. Instead, we're ranking each of our Fierce Five films.
Yeah.
So this is a new show idea that we plan to do as a special episode from time to time with guests giving their Fierce Five films.
Fierce Five. Bing, bing.
So this should be fun. So I'm looking forward to going over our lists and see which movies we love.
Yeah. So Mike and I are going to talk about five movies that are some of our favorites. We both racked our brains around what we would choose. But yeah, we're just going to talk about five of our favorite movies, five of the most fierce movies we've ever seen. And then, yeah, like Mike said, we're going to bring on special guest stars here and there to talk about five of their fiercest films that they've seen. And I'm really excited to talk with people about their favorite movies.
Absolutely. This will be fun.
Yeah.
But hey, before we get started, let's see what's going on in the world of movie news in a segment we simply call the Newsreel.
Newsreel time.
So first story, Josh Brolin has admitted that it was a Ryan Reynolds rom-com that made him want to play Cable in Deadpool 2.
Ooh, which one?
I will tell you.
Well, quit with the suspense, Mike.
So in an interview with Entertainment Weekly, Brolin said, "I was a secret fan of The Proposal, having watched it several times by myself. I told Ryan, I was like, I don't know why this is, and I don't know what this means psychologically, behaviorally, emotionally, but I have kind of a crush on you."
So don't
we all, though, right?
So he signed up to play a role that, where he's trying to kill him.
Exactly.
For an entire movie.
Exactly.
That's what you do when you have a crush on someone.
Love them to death.
Love them to literal death.
Yeah. So,
it's disappointing. I was hoping you were going to say Just Friends. That's my favorite Ryan Reynolds romantic comedy.
That is a great one. We've talked about that a little bit before.
We have.
I love that movie.
Oh, it's such a good movie. I haven't even seen their proposal. It just doesn't seem like my type of...
He's naked in it.
I am now going to see the proposal. It's on my queue. It's moved up very rapidly.
There you go.
In the course of this discussion.
So speaking of discussions, we'll probably be talking Deadpool soon. It comes out on May 18th.
It shall do.
And so second, just a quick update on last week's story. So MoviePass has reinstated the one movie per day feature, still at the $9.95 price. But they are also still offering a 4-movie-a-month option that still includes a 3-month subscription to iHeartRadio. Something tells me there's some business practices going over there that I just don't think that they quite know exactly what they're doing.
They're trying to figure it out. They're doing good stuff. They're young. They've certainly gotten a lot of subscribers really quickly, so they'll figure it out.
Well, I'll tell you what. There's a similar service called Cinemia. And
Cinehua?
Cinemia.
Oh, you a
Mamma Mia.
Oh my god. Here we go again.
But they've recently released a new pricing scale that is making it more competitive. And so something to think about if you decide that you want to look into it. They offer plans that allow you to see IMAX and 3D, allow you to get your movies in advance online, and also have plans where you can get 2 tickets at a time so you can take people with you.
Oh, wow.
So it's something to think about. Anyway, that is it for the movie news this week.
That's it. That's all it. You get.
So I'm ready to start talking about these movies. This is going to be
fun.
Yeah,
Fierce Five.
Fierce Five.
Bam, films. Bam, bam. Fierce Five.
So, Ryan, do you want to start or do you want me to start?
How about you start?
Okay.
Yeah.
So for my list, I specifically went with the movies that I consider, really, you could say that these are my top five favorite movies of my childhood. There are probably other movies that, maybe rank higher or whatever as an adult or whatever. But for me, I specifically kind of focused on the movies that, that meant something to me at a younger age that kind of then propelled me getting into movies.
Yeah. Yeah. I pick the movies, you know, it's always so weird when I talk about how much I really enjoy movies, or even now when I tell people I do a movie podcast and people ask me what my favorite movie is, that question really stresses me out. And so my list is probably five movies I think I would tell somebody, okay, here are the five that best describe me and what I like.
Uh-huh.
And they would then get a very clear sense of, at least a broad sense of what my taste in movies are.
Well, that's the beauty of this too. We could do another one of these, just the two of us, in a month or two, and it can be a completely different list, a different criteria. And
sure.
So, yeah.
And maybe we will.
And maybe we will. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and start. And so the first movie for me, number five,
yeah,
is the 1989 Batman.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I tell you, when I was a kid, I was a huge Batman comic book fan. I used to hang out at a local comic book store, and I can remember when they first put out the trailer for this movie, the comic book shop had a little party, a trailer viewing party. And it was funny, though, because it's got, like, you've got this entire store full of people huddled around a 20-inch TV with a built-in VCR, you know, just to play that trailer. But they played it over and over and over again throughout the day. But that was just a fun thing as a kid to remember, you know, that community of people getting excited about that movie.
Yeah, that was, and I was only 3 when that movie came out. I was 3 years old. But I do vividly remember it being one of my favorite movies as a kid. That movie series, the Batman movies of the 90s. I guess that one was 89, but really I think of it as the 90s. I was really into Tim Burton movies,
mm-hmm.
but specifically I really loved Batman and Batman Returns.
Yeah, both are great. I can remember, though, like, first hearing about this movie, and I was a big Tim Burton fan too already, but I was like, Beetlejuice as Batman?
Right.
Yeah, it was like, I'm not so sure, but it worked, man. I thought that Michael Keaton was a fantastic Batman for that movie. I think that movie, it was a good blend of, like, the 60s campiness Batman,
yeah,
but also of the dark kind of Batman that we would later see.
Right.
It was kind of prophetic in the way that it kind of blended those two together.
Yeah. So, and Michael Keaton is just so great. I'm so glad he has gotten that kind of second wind.
Yeah.
Lately, where he's been in some great things. Spotlight, Birdman,
Spider-Man. Yeah.
He's been doing really well. And it's just reminded me of how great he is and how great he was in those Batman movies.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So I think the most iconic performance, as great as Keaton was in this, was definitely Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
As Joker. Which Joker do you prefer? Nicholson, Hamill, or Ledger? We're not going to even discuss...
Cesar Romero?
No, I was going to say Leto.
Oh, okay.
You can throw in Romero.
Yeah.
But
that's okay.
Romero wouldn't even shave his damn mustache. That always looked so weird.
Well, because they couldn't CGI it out back then.
Lord.
You know, I mean, as much as I love this Batman movie as a whole, I think I would probably have to say Ledger. That performance, I mean, he won a damn Oscar for it.
Yeah.
But I love what the Jack Nicholson Joker is for this movie. And then, of course, you know, we had, you know, the ever smooth Billy Dee Williams playing Harvey Dent.
I know. He got screwed. He got screwed.
He really kind of did, didn't he?
They replaced him with Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. They knew that you had to have three names to play Two-Face. Three names, two faces. Could have been its own little movie tagline. Right, right. But something else interesting about Jack Nicholson with the role of the Joker. So to get him to play the role, not only did he get paid for this movie, but he also got paid for Batman Returns, which he wasn't even in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy, crazy.
So do you have a favorite scene from that movie at all?
Definitely the art museum.
That is mine.
The whole art museum setup. It just does such a... It's so iconic. Anytime you think about that movie, you think about... I feel like that's the scene you think about.
Yeah. Where does he get all those wonderful toys?
And yeah, Batman crashing through the glass.
Right. Yeah. That's a very iconic scene.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, and definitely the best superhero theme song.
Oh, yeah. Danny Elfman's music in that is great. And I also, I love the Prince soundtrack.
Yes. Great Prince soundtrack. But definitely my favorite superhero theme.
Well, and so the Justice League movie, Danny Elfman did the music for that, and he reused the Batman theme in that.
It was, yeah, it was in
there. He also had a little bit of, threw in a little bit of John Williams' Superman theme in there, too.
But can I throw some shade? I'm not a big fan of the Wonder Woman theme.
Oh, yeah?
The new one. It's so aggressive and just... I don't know. I don't think it's very... I like it, but
because it seemed to be the only distinct theme song of any of those characters, and maybe that was it, but...
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, let's move on. We've kind of talked about Batman here now, but what is your... The first one on your list, you're number five.
Actually, I'm going to stick with the Tim Burton theme a little bit. So when I was a kid, just to give you some background... Every night before I went to bed when I was really young, I had to watch The Wizard of Oz. It was the movie I had to watch until this movie replaced it.
Okay.
And every night before I went to bed, I had to watch this movie. First one I'm going to talk about, which is The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Love that movie.
Yeah. So that's why it's making it on my list. It was kind of between Wizard of Oz and Nightmare Before Christmas. But I feel like Nightmare Before Christmas is much more, I don't know, salient to my childhood. And it's one I still watch every year. And what's great about it is you can watch it for both Halloween and Christmas. It's a great Halloween and Christmas movie. So you can watch it both times. And one of the things that really strikes me when I watch it now is just how it's a fast movie. It's pretty short. It doesn't go on for very long. I don't even think it's a full 90 minutes. I think it is even less than that. I think it might be like 75 minutes or something. It's pretty short. But just that great stop motion animation, awesome songs, very iconic songs, great musical, fun story. It's still very relevant. I feel like a lot of people still very much relate to those characters, and a lot of people still, you know, dress up as those characters for Halloween.
Jack Skellington,
the
Pumpkin King. Yeah, he became very iconic.
Yeah, yeah. I just love that movie. I think it's a lot of fun.
And again, another great pairing of Tim Burton and Danny Elfman. And Danny Elfman even does the voice of Jack and sings those songs. And
I just love it. It's a good comfort movie for me.
Yeah,
you know, it's one I love to watch when it's cold. I have some hot chocolate. I'm just bundled up.
And it can be kind of creepy, but it's also kind of heartwarming at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why I love that movie.
Yeah. That's a really good one. I like that.
It may have been, was it, were you too old for it to be really relevant to you when it came out, or did you still watch it and enjoy it?
Because
it was 93.
Yeah. So I was in high school when that came out. So it didn't have that like childhood impact on me, but I do remember I saw that in the theater, and like I was saying, I was a big Tim Burton fan, so I was going to see it no matter what, but yeah, it didn't have the same impact as that some of the earlier ones had, but
right. It's just, yeah, it's got a great aesthetic. One that has been copied by other movie since then, like Coraline and I feel like there's a few others.
Yeah, well, those.
What was it? The one with the Corpse Bride? That one?
Well, that is a Tim Burton.
Right. So, like, those have been. The style is so iconic. It's been emulated. And I think that's a really big sign of something that has really lived on.
Yeah, agreed.
Any favorite scenes or anything from that one? Do you like that? Is it a movie you enjoy?
Oh, yeah, very much so. Very much so. My favorite scene has to do with my favorite song in the movie, and that's what's this?
Yeah.
I love that whole going through and his amazement of everything that's Christmas. It's really fun.
Yeah. That's a lot of fun. I like towards the end when, the kids are opening all the presents that Jack, delivers as Santa, and it's all like horrifying things. Yeah.
Severed heads
and snakes and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If I was Santa Claus, those are definitely the gifts I would be bringing kids. So I really enjoyed
God help
that.
Us if you actually have kids.
Right. And what a great gay character in this one in terms of the boogeyman.
The Oogie Boogie Man.
Oh, that such a queen.
Yeah.
Such a queen. So yeah, that's my number five.
All
Nightmare
right.
Before Christmas.
Good pick. All right, so I'm going from 89 to 86. You're going to see a trend here.
86, that's the year I was born.
Then you, sir, are Top Gun.
Well, I'm certainly top. I don't know about the gun part. Well, sometimes.
All right, well, let's get to the bottom of this. So,
oh, okay. That one's good. That one lands.
Keep it in. All right. That's what he said.
Oh.
So, moving on. Top Gun. Yeah, so this movie should have been like my homosexual awakening, I would think. But so I first saw this.
It certainly was Tom Cruise's.
Yeah, right. So I saw the first time I saw this movie was in the theater, and it was with my Boy Scout troop, and we were doing a lock-in kind of thing. I don't know. Were you in the Scouts?
I was in them, and I like to think that some of them were in me.
There you go. there's a merit badge for that.
Actually, it's a demerit.
A demerit badge. So anyway, we were doing this thing called a lock-in where we had our scout meetings. We were spending the night there. But we walked across the street to the movie theater, saw Top Gun, and then when we came back, got into our sleeping bags and watched Iron Eagle on VHS. You can't go from seeing Top Gun in the movie theater and coming back to watching a VHS copy of Iron Eagle. Iron Eagle is going to suck hard by then. You know, there's no comparison there. But anyway, I've seen this movie, well, umpteen thousand times at home. But every time it's been re-released, I've seen it again in the theater. They recently did, a couple years ago, they did an IMAX 3D re-release of it. So it was fun seeing it on the giant screen and in 3D. But is Top Gun a movie that...
Real talk, so I have... the first time I saw Top Gun ever was literally like a couple years ago.
Really?
Yeah, and it's still the only time I've seen it. I thought it was fine. It didn't really resonate with me.
Okay.
It's fine.
Yeah, well, it's, you know... That's fair. You know, like, seriously, I wanted to join the Navy after seeing this movie. But anyway, so that movie just still resonates with me. And, you know, of course, the volleyball scene. Everybody, you know, you gotta love that volleyball scene, man.
I mean, I may have had to cover my crotch with a pillow.
See?
When I was watching this movie with a group of friends, drinking some wine, trying to distract them.
Yeah, I mean, damn.
Yeah, that's great. That scene's great. But honestly, I couldn't tell you anything else that happens in that entire movie.
Well, if you want to borrow it and ever watch it again, just let me know.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Hold your breath.
Okay. All right. What is your next movie?
So my next movie might similarly not resonate with you at all. I am a big fan of Will Ferrell, specifically in the 2000s.
Okay.
I loved the movies he made. Anchorman, Step Brothers, Blades of Glory, even Semi-Pro, which is a lot of people haven't even seen. But
I know of it.
Yeah, his sense of humor and the way those movies landed were just so my type of humor. Just random, off the wall silliness. I just love it. And I knew I wanted to put one in this list, and I decided to go with Talladega Nights.
Okay.
That might
be one that I like more than some of the others.
Well, and like we talked about with our most anticipated movies of the year,
yeah,
I really enjoy the chemistry between Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, and this was their first movie where they were together, and they just
shake and bake, baby, shake and bake.
Exactly. So good. It's just so off the wall and stupid. Mm-hmm. And I love that kind of humor. Featuring Sacha Baron Cohen as the gay race car
Formula
driver.
One driver.
Yeah. Who's like sipping espresso in his car. And a great performance by Michael Clark Duncan.
I don't remember his part. Oh, yeah, I do.
He was,
yeah, I do.
He was one of
was
the,
like the pit crew guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's really funny in this. Didn't really have a lot of comedic roles. But this one, he was hilarious. And then, Gary Cole.
Yeah. I was just going to say,
dad.
Yeah.
Oh, with the cougar when he's trying to train him how to drive with like a live cougar in the car. And then he becomes friends with the cougar and names it Karen. I love when he blindfolds him and says, you just got to feel the road. Ricky Bobby, you got to feel the road. And he just starts driving and hits mailboxes and then crashes into a house. Just how absurd this movie is. Oh, and the kids are so funny.
Praying to baby Jesus.
I'm all jacked up on Mountain Dew. I'll come for you, Chip. Just, oh, so great.
So apparently it's a very quotable movie for you.
Very quotable. I find a lot of Will Ferrell's movies super quotable. Again, from that time. Lately, his movies have been not the best, you know.
These
Daddy's Homes movies. I think the last probably really good, widely well-received Will Ferrell movie was probably The Other Guys. The one with him and Mark Wahlberg when they were cops.
Yeah.
That was probably the last widely seen one. But I like how Will Ferrell, even still, he takes some risks and some chances to do. You can tell he's doing things that are interesting to him. So I haven't seen it. I still want to, just haven't gotten around to. But he made a Lifetime movie, like on the Lifetime channel. And it was taken completely serious. Like, he made it seriously, but it was all just stereotypes of Lifetime movies.
Okay.
And so it was played for drama. It wasn't played as a comedy, but just used all those tropes from Lifetime movies. And then he made a telenovela movie that I did see called Casa de mi Padre. The whole movie's in Spanish, and he's the star. And Will Ferrell does not speak Spanish. But he speaks his really bad Spanish, and it's hilarious. So he's had a really interesting career.
You know what movie I actually liked?
Which one do you like?
Land of the Lost.
You know, yeah, that one gets a lot of crap. I don't think it's as bad as its reputation.
It was so out there that it spoke to me some way.
Yeah, it's fine. It's not my favorite.
No.
It's not one I rewatch much at all, but I did enjoy it enough. But I would say Talladega Nights, Anchorman. Anchorman 2 is even a little underrated. I think it's better than people remember it for. I think people's expectations were just really high.
I didn't venture into that one.
It's good. Will Ferrell's just so smart. And I love when smart people make stupid comedy. Like, stupid comedy
you.
That's
yeah.
smart, you know? Yeah, so Talladega Nights is number 4 for me.
All right. Well, I am going back to the 80s with Back to the Future.
Okay.
So that is my number three. Specifically, the first Back to the Future. Like I
Not Back to the Future 3 when they were in the Wild Wild West?
So of the sequels, I liked that one the best. I liked that better than Back to the Future 2, believe it or not. A lot of people prefer Back to the Future 2 over 3. But specifically for this list, I'm only talking the first Back to the Future. That's the only one that, to me, is a top five worthy movie.
Okay.
When that movie came out, my mom took me and several of my friends to see it for my 10th birthday. So October of 1985, little Mikey was seeing Back to the Future with his friends.
Fun. Nice.
Yeah. I think for the time, the special effects were really good in that movie. You know, every kid my age wanted a DeLorean.
Mm-hmm. such an iconic movie car.
Yeah.
Like, definitely, like, one of the top three most iconic movie cars.
I mean, here it showed up again, you know, now in Ready Player One.
Right.
But the car, you could almost consider to be one of the characters of the movie.
I mean, it's certainly, I think, the most recognizable part.
Yeah.
For sure.
Absolutely. But it also solidified my unapologetic love for Huey Lewis in the News. I remember doing a lip sync contest at church to The Power of Love. I don't think I won, but I love that movie. Are you a fan?
You know, I actually haven't seen it in a very, very long time. It's one I need to rewatch. Because I'm sure I would love it. I just don't have a lot of super vivid memories of it. I remember watching it as a kid and liking it, but I honestly don't think I've seen it since I was a kid.
It's a very rewatchable movie.
I'm sure it is. I don't know why I haven't watched it again. I need to. Making my list, I realized, and we talked about this before we started recording, but your movies are all older movies.
Yeah.
From the 80s and 90s or before even.
Yeah, 89 and older.
Right. And mine are all fairly recent. Nightmare Before Christmas was my oldest movie on the list, which I think is cool.
Yeah.
But I need to do a better job of going back and watching some older movies that I either saw a long time ago and need to refresh myself on, or some classics I never saw that I need to go back and watch.
Well, maybe the next time we do this list, I'll do movies that are more my favorite, more current movies, and you can do ones that are older.
Ooh, that's fun. Yeah, we'll do that.
We'll flip the script.
Yeah.
Is that what the youngins say?
It done been flipped.
But anyway, you know, so Back to the Future made Michael J. Fox a household name. You know, people already kind of knew him from, what was that show? Family Ties. Thank you. That movie, I guess, if anything, kind of turned him into a movie star. So he was their first choice for the movie, but because of Family Ties, he wasn't able to sign on to the movie. So Eric Stoltz was actually hired to play the part of Marty, and they started filming with him, but apparently it was just like not working out. It was terrible. So they went to the producers of Family Ties and like, let's make a deal here. So they worked it out then. So Michael J. Fox could actually work on that movie certain days and then do Family Ties.
Oh, interesting.
So then they got him after all. So that was all for the better, I think.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I will say, so one of my favorite current shows is Rick and Morty. Uh-huh. Do you watch it?
I know enough about it, but I don't watch it. But
yeah. Well, what's funny is the original cartoon was based on
Marty and Doc.
Yeah, which is why Rick looks so much like Doc.
Yeah.
And Morty instead of Marty.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's all I have to contribute, I guess. Taking it to something more recent, which is kind of what I do.
Well,
it's my move.
The funny thing is so the past couple of my movies, music has been kind of a recurring theme. With Back to the Future, like I said, I already talked about Huey Lewis, but so one of my favorite scenes in the movie is there's a scene where after Marty's back in time, he is in his dad's bedroom, George, trying to wake him up, and he puts some headphones on his head, and he's dressed up in his like nuclear protection gear that he was wearing at the beginning of the movie, and he puts a cassette tape in his Walkman, and it says Eddie Van Halen on it, and he's like playing this like screeching Eddie Van Halen riff to wake him up, and he's like, "I am Darth Vader. I come from the planet Vulcan." So that's one of those scenes where it's like, it's my love of Star Wars, music, and just Back to the Future.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
So what is your third movie on your list?
My third one is one that I am sure we're going to do a Rainbow Rewind on at some point, because it's just so great. But it is another film from 2006, so same year as Talladega Nights. And it is a little movie called The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, yeah.
So great. Yeah. My favorite Meryl Streep performance, easily. So quotable. In fact, last night I was hanging out with one of my good friends, and he just kept saying Miranda Priestly quotes out of nowhere. And it was outstanding. That movie, probably one of my most rewatchables. I watch it a good bit still.
So that's another one that I hadn't seen until Pete made me watch it.
Yeah. What did you think?
But I loved it. So it's I've seen it two or three times now. I'm probably still not at a quoting stage, but I love that movie.
Yeah. I live for Meryl Streep in that movie. When she digs into Anne Hathaway's character,
uh-huh,
when they're, you know, deciding between the belts, and she goes, they're both so similar. And Anne Hathaway laughs, and Meryl Streep just digs into her and rips her apart. So, it was great. I want to command that kind of presence. She's that character that every bitchy gay wants to be in real life and thinks they are in real life, but could never be because she's just so amazing. What a great role. And then one of the first times I ever saw Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
If not the first time.
Me too.
I mean,
what a great introduction to her.
Yeah. That was such a great character there. Stanley Tucci's character.
Oh, yeah.
Had some really great moments. I loved his talk with Anne Hathaway about...
It's like he was very sympathetic to her.
Right.
Kind of.
But also pushed her.
Right.
I don't know, just a real fun movie, especially for a young gay kid. I mean, this came out when I was in college, and I remember watching it, sitting around watching it with some friends and just falling in love with it. Yeah. Definitely a favorite of mine.
Good pick. Yeah. I bet we will use that as a Rainbow Rewind one of these days.
Yeah, I feel like it has a huge gay following. Gays love Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
For sure.
Gays love Meryl.
Gays love Meryl. The Academy loves Meryl. And really, looking back, she was nominated for an Oscar for the role, of course.
Right.
She sneezes in a movie as an extra in the background, she would get nominated for
Best
Supporting Actress. Didn't win for that one. Oh, yeah, but I'm glad Meryl got a nomination. I mean, of course she did. Like I said, but yeah, such a great movie. And a really strong Anne Hathaway performance.
Yeah.
I love Anne Hathaway. I know some people don't. I love her. And a great Catwoman. Underrated Catwoman.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
She's no Michelle Pfeiffer, but...
Or Eartha Kitt. All right. So that was my number three. Mike, we're down to our... Top two.
Our top
Fierce
two.
Two. So what is your number two?
So my number two is actually from 1982, E.T.
Oh, okay.
That movie is what I consider to be the movie that made me fall in love with going to the movies.
Okay.
I think I may have mentioned that.
I think it was in our intro episode.
I think it was, yeah. But, you know, given that it came out in 82, is E.T. a movie that you have memories of watching? Like, was it?
Again, it's like Back to the Future. I remember watching it. I remember seeing it, but I haven't revisited it in a long time. And there are other Spielberg movies. I guess the Spielberg movies that held more relevance to me were his movies from the 90s.
Okay.
So Jurassic Park, but actually probably the one I saw the most was Hook.
Okay.
I saw Hook a lot when I was a kid. I actually really liked Hook.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't, but
well, and
I
so,
really liked it. And so, E.T., Raiders of the Lost Ark, those I've seen.
Yeah.
And like, but they weren't as prevalent in my childhood, and I have not revisited them again. Those are movies I should definitely watch again, but just haven't.
In 2002, for the 20th anniversary of the movie, it got re-released into the theaters. And Spielberg got some pressure from the studio to do some upgraded, like CGI.
Yeah, I remember. They switched out the guns with walkie-talkies.
I do
remember that.
And switched out some of the puppet E.T. with CGI and stuff like that. But
yeah, it was a bold choice to replace puppet E.T. with CGI Yoda.
Correct.
Yeah, that was weird. That was, it was off-putting.
actually, though, Spielberg was not a big fan of the idea of making those changes. You know, like, you know, he's good friends with George Lucas, and George Lucas made so many changes to Star Wars because he wanted to and wanted to toy with the movie. Spielberg did not want to make those changes, but the studio wanted something new to advertise for putting the movie back out in the theater. But so thankfully, though, when it went to Blu-ray, then the updated version and a remastered version of the original theatrical release were both on in the DVD, or, you know, in the packaging. So unlike Star Wars, where now, like, you can't get the original versions anymore.
Right.
That was the only time that, like, the altered version of E.T. was ever put out. Anything else that's come out since then has been the original.
Okay.
So I'm glad about that. You know, it's like, for me, at least, I prefer the original, and it's what Spielberg intended. So that's what people see.
And, you know, I gotta say, on the topic of re-releasing movies, there's a lot of movie trends that I'm not a big fan of. 3D probably being one of the most prominent. I just am not a fan of 3D. But I love the thought of them re-releasing movies, old movies, in the theater. Because there's just something about seeing a movie in the theater that's so fun and cool and authentic,
right.
And it puts you back in, like, that's how I found and fell in love with Star Wars, is when they re-released those in 97, the special editions.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, when they started all this 3D craziness, they kept re-releasing some old movies, and it was a big, big thing. So seeing Jurassic Park in a movie theater as an adult, and
like
the
I said,
Lion
Top
King.
Gun was one that they did.
Yeah,
that too.
I mean, I think it'd be cool. I wish they would open a movie theater.
Them. Maybe us.
Yeah. But I wish there would be a movie theater where, I think it'd be fun. Every week they only play one movie, and it's a movie that was released that same weekend sometime in the past.
Right, yeah.
That would be so cool. Like an on this day movie theater. And every week they just play a movie that was released that day.
You know, it'd be kind of cool, though, if, like, Gateway or Studio 35 or something like it at least did, like, a
well,
you
Gateway
know,
does a lot of playing older movies. They do.
That's true. I guess they do. I was thinking of just the Nina stuff, but
No, they do big event. Like, I know around Halloween, they'll play a lot of old horror movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do a great job with that. I can't wait. Gateway Film Center is just so great. I love that place. Love it. So amazing.
You know, so probably my favorite scene in the movie is, it's Halloween. The kids are trying to get E.T. to the woods so he can phone home. And they have him dressed as a ghost, but there's other kids trick or treating. And there's a kid dressed up as Yoda.
Yeah.
That walks by, and E.T.'s like, home. Home.
Yeah.
And the kind of meta effect there is that it's kind of funny, because then in Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, in the Senate Rotunda or whatever, there is a scene where you can see a group of the species of E.T. in one of the Senate pods.
Yeah.
And it's like, does that mean E.T. is canon?
Yeah, it's all the same universe.
Does that mean that it's the Force that he's using when he's making the bikes fly?
Oh, maybe. So E.T., Secret Jedi.
He's a Jedi.
Secret Jedi, E.T.
Yeah.
Wow.
You heard it here first, folks.
Cool.
All right. What is your number two?
Well, you know, you brought up a Batman movie, so I'm going to bring up a Batman movie.
Okay.
So 1998's Batman and Robin, obviously. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mr. Freeze, you know, when you think of iconic film roles.
Absolutely. I mean,
you think of.
No, I totally think of Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy over
and
that.
Batman credit card. I mean, come on. And nipples.
Bat nipples. Come
nipples,
on.
Yes. That was a joke.
Thank you.
But it is a Batman movie. And these two movies that I'm going to talk about, my last two, are two of my favorites.
Okay.
If someone really, you know, told me you have to give me your two favorites, these are the two. And so number two for me is, I mean, I'll kind of count the whole trilogy, but very specifically The Dark Knight.
There you go.
I love The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Heath Ledger's Joker is the best movie villain there's ever been, in my opinion. Such an iconic role. And I remember when the buildup to this movie was happening, seeing, you know, hearing that Heath Ledger was cast, I was very skeptical.
That Brokeback Mountain guy?
Not even that. Just like, I was actually thinking more of like him in The Patriot.
Okay.
You know, like, how's the aggressive kid from The Patriot going to be the Joker? And at that point, you know, everyone's concept of the Joker really was Jack Nicholson.
Right.
That's what everyone. So, and the conversation was all, how is he going to live up to this character? And it was just so brilliant how different he was.
Yeah.
In a great way, to where now they're both seen as iconic. I think Ledger's probably even more so now.
I'd agree with that.
I think it's surpassed Nicholson for sure. But so iconic. So, I mean, such a scary character, really.
Right.
Such a great villain. And then Christian Bale, I think, is my favorite Batman as well. Obviously, George Clooney killed it. And, Batman Robin. And I mean that literally, he killed that character.
Yeah, he killed that franchise.
Yeah. he wasn't the reason it was bad. There was a lot. But I love Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Even I know people make fun of the voice a lot, but
what voice?
I didn't mind the voice. I do like in the one thing I'll say about the new DC movies with Ben Affleck, Batman, I like how they explain it with the little voice modulator.
Yeah.
I do like that instead of Christian Bale just doing that weird voice. I feel like if you did that enough, you would definitely lose your voice.
Right.
You would not be able to talk
if you talked like this all the time.
Yeah. Just a really great cast. And the supporting performances. Obviously, I think Ledger stole the show.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The supporting performances were so strong. Michael Caine as Alfred. Again, like, you think of Michael Goh from the original Batman movies as Alfred, and you're like, well, how do they?
And right. Now, and he became iconic in that role because he even transcended the changes of Batman and directors.
Batman, yeah.
The Batman.
he and the Commissioner Gordon actor were the only two, I think, that were in all four of those movies.
Yeah.
But Michael Caine is Alfred. Now, when I see Michael Caine, I kind of see Alfred. And Gary Oldman as Commissioner Gordon. Really great.
He was great.
And Aaron Eckhart, who has had such a weird career. I'm surprised he's not more. I mean, he had, I love Thank You for Smoking. That's one of my favorite movies. Didn't include on this list, but really great movie. And then just never really did a lot else. That was great.
And I'll tell you, Maggie Gyllenhaal, I think, was a much better Rachel than
Katie Holmes.
Than Katie Holmes.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad they, I did not mind that switch at all. So yeah, it's just so cool, so great. Really smart movie. Really, I mean, it was the movie that it was a great blockbuster. You know, one of the highest grossing movies of all time, but also kind of transcended what you think of when you think of comic book movies, was actually taken seriously, so much so that a lot of people credit The Dark Knight with the reason we have more than five Best Picture nominees now, because people were so upset that it got snubbed at the Oscars that year, because, you know, people don't take comic book movies seriously.
Right.
But, and I'm a big Christopher Nolan fan, and of all his movies, this is definitely my favorite Chris Nolan movie, too.
I think, too, because of the kind of movies that Christopher Nolan made before doing the Dark Knight trilogy, they were serious, legit movies that, that when he took to doing a comic book franchise, it was looked at more than just a comic book movie. It was a dramatic action adventure movie.
Yeah. And seeing this, I went, I went and saw this opening night, like, when that was back when they only did midnight
showings. Midnight screens,
yep. There was no 7 p.m.
Right, right.
No, you had to go at midnight.
I was at a midnight one for this one, too.
Yeah, and I bought my ticket as soon as I could, and it was IMAX, and we went, and the IMAX wasn't working.
Oh, no.
So we had to wait. We didn't get to see it at midnight, because IMAX wasn't working, so we had to wait for the first midnight standard showing to let out, and then go see it in that theater.
Oh.
Yeah. So I was crazy pissed waiting for it.
And I'm guessing crazy tired.
Yes. Yeah, because I think I had school the next day or something, because I was in college then, because this was 2008. But I can't remember being as excited throughout a movie as I was the first time I saw The Dark Knight. Like, cheering, gasping, smiling the whole time with just how awesome it was. And for me, that scene with Heath Ledger walking into the, it looked like it was like a restaurant or something where the crime bosses were all meeting.
Uh-huh.
And he just walks in with that laugh real slowly and the pencil.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. That was the moment where I forgot any other version of the Joker, and I was just so elated and excited at this character.
Yeah, well, so I remember when the Blu-ray for Batman Begins came out, it had the intro scene on there, and I just remember watching that on repeat, just waiting for that movie to come out.
Oh my gosh, so great. What a perfect start to a movie.
Yeah,
just set the scene, really set up. It's so great when a movie like that sets up its villain to be, okay, this is a big threat.
Yeah,
Avengers Infinity War did that really well with Thanos, as we talked about last week.
Yeah,
this movie did it so well, just setting up Ledger as this very, very intimidating, scary, chaotic madman character.
You know, with as well as Christopher Nolan did with that trilogy, it's really a shame what's kind of happened with DC since then. Like, if they had found a way to build upon that universe, and I understand why Christopher Nolan wanted his three movies to be just those and done.
Well, actually, so I don't know if you remember Superman Returns, the
Brandon Routh
one that came out in 2006, I think. But the original idea was that Superman and Christian Bale's Batman were supposed to come together.
Oh, wow.
In a movie. Right. You can't really imagine that, can you? But that was the intention, was that those two would cross over. But after Superman Returns did not meet the expectations that they had for it, they decided to scrap that and start over with what became Man of Steel. There was that weird time in the mid-2000s where these movies went just a little too campy. I feel like comic book movies before the Marvel Universe came around either strayed for super serious. So you got Tim Burton's Batman, you got the Dark Knight trilogy, right. You got really bad ones like Spawn. If you remember that one.
I do.
Or even X-Men movies, right?
Yeah.
That were played a little more seriously. And then you had really campy ones. So definitely Superman Returns. Definitely at least the third Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Tobey Maguire emo Spider-Man.
Oh, God. Yeah. And the MCU came around and just blended both of those so perfectly.
Yeah.
But these movies didn't know what they wanted to be, or they did, and it was so dramatically different. I think they thought they had to either be serious or campy.
Yeah.
And there wasn't really much wiggle room in the middle. But just to wrap up, that's why Christopher Nolan was just so perfect for The Dark Knight. His sensibility was exactly what they needed, because Joel Schumacher tried his best to kill Batman, to kill any potential for there ever to be another Batman movie. And Christopher Nolan really just, I think, washed away all the negativity that was around that character for almost 10 years.
And you know what? It was smart for him, too, I think, to start off by, like, using villains like Ra's al Ghul and Scarecrow and kind of starting fresh.
Yeah.
And then bringing in the Joker.
Yes, for sure. I mean, I almost see Batman Begins as a prequel. I mean, it literally is.
Yeah.
But, you know, The Dark Knight is the movie that really sets the tone for that trilogy.
Yeah.
And Batman Begins is really just a prequel to set that up by establishing this world, establishing Bruce Wayne as a character and his motivations, because really the Joker was the ultimate test. And Dark Knight Rises is good. It's a solid movie. It's a good, solid ending to that trilogy. It closes the chapter, or it closes the book on that series really well. But The Dark Knight really defines that trilogy.
I agree. Yeah. In fact, so when I was coming up with my list, the Dark Knight was on my list. It didn't make the cut for what I wanted my list to be, but it was one I was considering.
Is it for me? It is. I wonder for you, is it best superhero movie of all time, or do you have another?
No, I think as far as superhero movies go, yeah, it is the best superhero movie of all time.
I think so too, for sure.
So before we get to our number ones, I'll go through just a few of my runner-ups.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, so ironically, when I was coming up with my list, I came up with a total of 15 movies total. I won't go through all of them. But the funny thing is that of the 10 that didn't make it, 4 of them were from 1984.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they were Ghostbusters, This is Spinal Tap, Purple Rain, and Gremlins.
Okay.
All 4 of those movies hold special places in my heart for different reasons. Ghostbusters and Gremlins were two that, like, I watched over and over and over again as a kid. Purple Rain was one that I wasn't allowed to watch the movie, but I snuck and watched it on HBO. Like, I was allowed to have the soundtrack when it first came out, but I wasn't allowed to watch the movie.
Okay.
But This is Spinal Tap. I didn't actually find out. Now, you probably don't. I don't know if you know anything about This is Spinal Tap.
I do.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay.
It's hilarious. And not to spoil my number one movie, but it's a very similar movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that I didn't learn about that movie until middle school, maybe beginning of high school. So late 80s, early 90s. Watching it with two of my best friends who I played in bands with, and that movie just really kind of became the documentary, or the mockumentary of our lives. You know, it was just like anytime something would go wrong backstage, or we'd have a problem with instrument cables or whatever, it was always like that was our Spinal Tap moment or something. So
this one goes to 11.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you just make 10 a little bit louder? Oh, well, this one goes to 11.
Yeah. That is my quotable movie.
Yeah. Like, it's really good.
Quoted it all the time. But and a couple others were Jurassic Park, Dark Knight, and The Lost Boys.
Okay.
So those were some of the what didn't make the final cut.
Okay. Some of mine, It's getting a little self-conscious about the recency bias in my list. So
okay.
It actually is one of my favorite musicals of all time. My Fair Lady.
Okay.
I've
never seen it.
I think we talked about this before. Yeah. My Fair Lady, so flippin' funny. And it strikes me every time I watch it, just how funny it still is. There's a scene, and now I won't say much more else about it, but there's a scene where he's trying to teach Eliza, he's trying to teach her how to be a proper lady.
Uh-huh.
And he has these marbles, and he's putting the marbles in her mouth, and she's having to talk with them. It's like an exercise.
Right.
And she accidentally swallows one of the marbles, and she just gets this look on her face of shock. And she's trying to tell him, and he's like, what are you trying to say? And then when he figures out that she swallowed him over, he goes, oh, that's fine. I have plenty more. only criticism, it's a little long. It feels long.
Okay.
But yeah, I won't spend much time on the others. I also had Jurassic Park on there, The Lion King, which I mentioned in our intro episode as being a very memorable, movie going experience for me as a kid. My favorite Pixar movie, just missed the list, but it's Up.
That's a good one.
I love Up. The first like 15 minutes of that movie guarantee will make me cry every time I watch it.
If it doesn't make anybody cry, they're dead monster. Inside.
And then I had one that was a pretty recent movie, 2010. I just love this movie. It's not that noted, but pretty well it was pretty well received, just didn't make a lot of money, but movie called Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, that's a good one.
I love that movie.
Actually just bought the soundtrack on vinyl.
It's so good. But yeah, those are the ones that just missed making it on my list.
All right, good runners up.
Yeah, so let's do our number ones.
All right. So, this should come to as no surprise to anybody.
Let me guess. Angels in the Outfield.
Oh my God, how'd you know? But it's part two. Oh.
Angels in the Infield.
Right.
Okay, got it.
So I did my number one as a trilogy.
Uh-huh.
And that would be Star Wars, the Shocker. Original trilogy.
Shocker.
Yeah, so not to... be a prequel hater, because I'm not, but when you're talking best of all time, as far as I'm concerned, the original trilogy is where it's at.
The OG.
The OGT.
Right. Yeah.
So of the original, though, Empire Strikes Back is my number one favorite.
Well, yeah, I think that's most
people. I don't know. I know a lot of people who will tell you Jedi. In fact, Pete, my husband is Jedi is his favorite.
I think Jedi might be, I think Empire is definitely the best made of the three films. I think Jedi might be the most rewatchable for me. I don't know, because that whole, it's the conclusion.
It's got a finality to it.
Yeah. It has some very iconic scenes.
Yeah.
Well,
so interestingly enough, so like I said, Empire is my favorite of the three, but Jedi has my favorite opening scene.
Everything, yeah, on Tatooine with Jabba.
Well, before that, when they've got it opens up with Vader's shuttle coming onto the Death Star as it's being constructed, and it's the commander is like, Vader is telling him, you better get your shit together because the Emperor's coming. So if you're not on schedule, you're going to have to answer to him.
That's the exact line.
That is the exact line.
Get your shit together, dude. Emperor's coming. He's pissed.
He's going to electrocute your ass.
He called me and he told me, what the fuck?
Right.
And I was like, I know, right?
Dude.
Yeah. Obviously, James Earl Jones does it a little better, but that's exactly word for word what he says.
He called me though and wanted me to coach him a little bit on the best way to do that. Of course, it was 83, so I was 7. I was like, well, yeah, well, the way I would say it is.
Yeah. Baby Mike. Baby Mike is the best. Oh my God, Baby Mike. That was everything. That was everything I never knew I needed. And now that I have that in my life, I don't think I can live without it.
All right. Well.
Oh, great. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So,
here's my question. So you mentioned, I think everyone would agree, prequels nowhere near
correct
the quality level. Even if you like the prequels, yeah. Like, if I met someone who said the prequels were their favorites, I think I would just punch them square in the face. But how do you think the new trilogy so far, 2/3 of it that we've seen, compared to the original? How close do you think they are in quality?
I think they're close. I think that they're doing a good job continuing the story. It's not necessarily how I would have wanted to see the story go, but I'm not the one that's getting paid to tell these stories. So I think with what they're doing, I like it, and I'm very excited to see how they decide to end this trilogy and what they do with Leia. But I think that it's a worthy set of sequels.
Yeah. I mean, for me, so far I'm putting these kind of on the same footing as the originals. I mean, I think they go perfectly with them, whereas the prequels, especially now that we do have the sequel trilogy and these other standalone movies, I feel like the prequels, as time goes on and as we get more Star Wars, are going to feel so out of place.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that I think that the prequels were so CGI heavy.
I know.
That it dates them very much so.
So poorly.
And they've really made obviously there's still a lot of CGI in the new ones, but they're making a very conscious effort to use practical effects wherever they can and doing a good job mixing practical and CGI.
Yeah.
And it makes the universe seem like the same Star Wars universe that we know from the original trilogy.
Yeah.
Even like Rogue One and you know, this upcoming Solo movie, I thought Rogue One was great and was a great way to kind of tell the story of what happens before A New Hope.
Right.
And it apparently was riddled with production problems, but what they turned out with was solid.
So while we're on the topic of Star Wars, can we discuss my recent Grindr experiences?
Sure.
Because I texted you about this.
Yeah.
So I changed for May the 4th, you know, spirit of the season. I changed my Grindr profile picture to me in a Chewbacca onesie. Yeah, I can't do that. It's a good picture of me. I think it's solid.
I was living for it.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's also on my Instagram and my Facebook. So if you want to see this picture, check either of those out. But that picture attracted some interesting people. Some interesting people. I found a lot of the bear community that were really into me.
And I didn't know they were on Grindr.
The ones that were there, it's spring now and they all came out of hibernation. That's for sure. So a lot of bears, a lot of nerds. I got a guy who sent me a picture of him in full Star Trek getup on like a set type thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I was like, hey, now we're going to get real nerdy here. Really? You're going to respond to my Star Wars picture with a Star Trek picture? You can go fuck yourself.
Right.
Yeah. Captain Kirk. Yeah. So there was that. And then, yeah, I got a lot of cosplayers.
Okay.
A lot of those folks. Uh-huh. And then a lot of really interesting pickup lines about what people apparently want to do with Wookiees. So it was such a scary day, Mike. Some of my friends asked me why I didn't just change my picture back. And I was actually pretty entertained.
Sure.
For the day.
Absolutely.
And I changed it the next day. And kind of went back to my normal types of people coming for me. But yeah, that it was a group of people, let's just say, that were not exactly my type coming for me that day. Living that fantasy.
There you go.
So,
all right. Well, so you said you saw them in the 90s when they re-released them.
Yes.
So had you seen them before that, or was that your introduction?
I may have seen them at some point before that, but that was my first real introduction. Like, my dad made a huge deal of taking me and my little brother.
Uh-huh.
And I was perfect age for Star Wars at that time. I was 10 years old when they re-released them in 90s. That was summer 97, I think.
They did them like 3 months, one after the other.
And we went to all three, and it was such a big deal. And then the prequels were announced, you know, right after that. So I got obsessed with episode one. You know, read everything about
too.
I had all the toys. I had all the merch. Every piece of merch you could possibly have for episode one, I had. I was just nerding out over it. And then when it didn't really live up to, like, I tried so hard for so long to convince myself that it was great. And then just, you know, I appreciated the prequels at the time because it was the only Star Wars we had.
Yeah.
But now I can look back on it and be like, yeah, that was trash. Except episode three is okay. It's a serviceable ending.
Actually, I like episode three quite a bit. I mean, I can get by with episode one and two. They're not ones that I typically ever just like put on to watch, but I do occasionally actually just put in episode three to watch.
Yeah.
So Empire Strikes Back was also the first one that I saw, because I saw that in the theater when it came out.
Okay. So you saw Empire before A New Hope?
Yeah, because so I saw it in 1980, so I was five, you know, so that was the first movie I ever saw in the movie theater. And then I saw A New Hope in 81 when they re-released it to include A New Hope in the title.
Right.
So, and then obviously Jedi in 83. So, you know, talking about the special editions, like, I'm not a huge fan of the special editions, with the exception though of Empire. I actually really like what they did in the special editions of Empire, the extended Wampa scene and changing out the Emperor to be Ian McKellen so that it matches the rest of, you know, the visuals of the Emperor that we've seen. And then the stuff on Cloud City, some of it's just visual backgrounds and stuff like that. But there was stuff in like changing Han not shooting first, and adding the Jabba scene in A New Hope. There's stuff like that that I don't like.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know any different. So
yeah,
I'm fine
so yeah. Anyway, so that's my number one. What's yours? Cool.
So I referenced when you talked about This Is Spinal Tap, said that mine was kind of similar. It's actually from that same group, Christopher Guest and all them. My favorite of all time is Best in Show.
Oh, I love Best in Show.
I freaking love Best in Show. It's as a dog lover, I think that's why I saw it when I saw it. It's just so funny and so smart and has all these, it's not slapstick humor. It's all these just little things that are just so silly and stupid and funny to me. One of my favorite gags in it that I didn't see, I've seen this movie dozens of times. I can rewatch it anytime. And one of my favorite little bits is when Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara's characters, they're trying to check into the hotel for the dog show, and they're talking to the hotel manager and everything. In the background, there are clocks. And you know how places will have a bunch of clocks with different like cities.
New York, London. Yeah,
and the different times. Well, every city for the clocks are in the same time zone. So it's New York, Philadelphia, Boston, D.C. Like,
I don't think I ever caught that. That's funny.
And it cracks me up. It's like, why do you need all these to tell you what time it is in these? Like, that little, but that attention to detail and the little thing just is what makes all those movies that they do. So Waiting for Guffman.
Right.
A Mighty Wind. Have you seen Mascots?
I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, it's on Netflix. They made a movie just for Netflix,
yeah,
and it came out, I think it's been maybe a couple years now. It's really funny. It's really, really funny. But Best in of all those movies, all those mockumentary movies, Best in Show, just so quotable.
Yeah.
But even the quotes, like the quotes themselves aren't necessarily funny. It's just how they're delivered and everything.
Well, they're so dry.
Exactly. And I've watched this movie with some people who, it's not a movie I would recommend to everyone because some people just don't get that dry humor,
yeah,
that's in it. But I live for it. It kills me when he's driving around and talking about how he can name every nut. He's just naming nuts. Cashew nut, pistachio nut, all natural white pistachio nut. Like, it's so stupid. That alone is not funny, but
right,
the way he delivers
but you're right, it's not going to be for everybody.
No, there's people, and that's the thing. When I first found this movie, it wasn't long after it came out in 2000. It wasn't that long after it came out, and I was, you know, a teenager at that point. And even then, it was really funny to me, and I tried showing it to some people, and I felt like everyone I showed it to, you know, they wanted to watch something like, you know, Old School or
right,
Anchorman,
right,
or something,
yeah,
like that. I don't, but movies that were popular in the early 2000s, and that was the kind of humor, you know. Whereas while I love those movies, Best in Show just kills me. It's so funny.
So I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I saw Harry Shearer, Christopher Guest, and Michael McKean went out on tour doing an acoustic tour, and it was called Unwigged and Unplugged. And they were performing songs from Spinal Tap and A Mighty Wind.
Oh, wow.
And it was so fun.
Oh, I bet.
Actually, I even met Jamie Lee Curtis that night, who's married to Christopher Guest, because we got there early enough that we were taking our seat, and she was walking up the aisle, and I happened to be on an end seat, and I stood up, Jamie, and she gave me a big hug. Hi!
Oh, that's nice.
So that was just a night to remember. It was,
yeah,
so fun. And to hear all those songs live, and just the three of them up there, acoustic guitars, and Harry Shearer had a stand-up bass or an acoustic bass. And it was really fun.
But in that group that they put out these movies, what a perfect collection of talent.
Yeah.
Just some of the funniest people between them and then Eugene Levy. I love that stupid two left feet bit throughout the movie.
And Catherine O'Hara has been in a few
she
of those
has,
too. And
she's so great.
Yeah. Just a great group of people. And they're all kind of that mockumentary style.
Right. And Jane Lynch.
Jane Lynch. God, who,
Jennifer Coolidge is, the Stifler's mom.
Jennifer Coolidge. And
I love the scene where she's with her husband and they're talking. We have so many common interests. We both love talking and not talking. We could talk or not talk for hours and still find things to not talk about.
To not talk about.
Like, I just love, it's just so funny to me. It kills me. But obviously, I think the person who steals the movie is Fred Willard.
Oh, yeah.
As the commentator, and I don't know who the actor is who is with him there, but their chemistry, oh my gosh. I wish Fred Willard would actually, in that character, be a commentator for dog shows, or any sport, really.
Well, he was in Spinal Tap, too, and he just has a really... an odd sense of humor.
Yeah.
But it works so well.
Oh, it's it's so great just how off the wall he is. And the comments he makes, he's just so funny. I don't know where... Because, I mean, a lot of the movie is improvised.
Yeah.
They have a direction that they're going, but they kind of just also make stuff up as they're going. I wonder how much of what he says is stuff he just thought of, because it's hilarious.
Yeah, he's good. He's quick, too.
Yeah. Oh, so quick.
Yeah.
Perfect delivery, perfect timing. just outstanding. That whole, the whole cast in that movie is just great. But anyway, yeah, I can't say enough good things about it. If you have, I wanted to make it my number one because I feel like it's one that a lot of people haven't seen. But I feel like I'm meeting more and more people who have seen it and really like it, which makes me really happy. But if you haven't seen it, Best in Show is so, so, so great.
Yeah, that's a great choice. And really, any of those Christopher Guest movies.
Yeah, you got to see Mascots. Mascots.
I will. Yeah, I definitely got to check that out. It's actually where it's like, it's not that I've been avoiding. I just keep forgetting that it's out there. It's like, I got to go out and find it and put it in my queue.
Yeah, it's a really fun watch. It's a mascot competition.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, that alone, there's
it kind of writes itself, I think.
Yeah. I mean, what a great concept, right? Alone, but even some of the things they have. So there's a furry who keeps trying to sneak in and and get all, you know, sexual up there.
Right, right.
There's one of the mascots is just a giant fist. And he has this bit where the middle finger just flaps up on the costume. It's really, really good. And what I love about the Christopher Guest movies is I feel like they all are so funny, and every actor who gets to be in them is so funny, but they get to play different types of roles, and it really shows the breadth of talent that everyone who, especially the regulars, have. So they, it's not, Eugene Levy doesn't just play Jerry in every movie. He plays different kinds of characters in all these movies. Christopher Guest doesn't just play, you know, this Southern kind of weird yokel kind of guy. He plays all different kinds, and it's just, it's so brilliant. It's so good.
Great.
So good.
Well, just to reiterate, hopefully we're going to extend this concept and get some guests and revisit lists ourselves.
Yeah.
But this was really fun.
Lots of fun.
Lots of fun. So, obviously before we go though, we got to dish out some recommendations.
Weekly recommendation time.
So, since I started the list, I'll let you start the recommendation.
You're going to hate me, Mike.
Why? You don't have one this week.
I have another podcast that I'm recommending.
Moving on, my recommendation.
Mike hates when I recommend other podcasts. They only listen to you should see, he beats me after these whenever I that. But I went to a live taping of my favorite political podcast. I had to categorize that because Obviously my favorite podcast is this one. So my favorite political podcast, it's hosted by a former Obama speechwriter and comedian and adorable gay Jewish man of my dreams who I desperately want to marry. So if he listens to this, consider this a formal proposal. But it's called Love It or Leave It. And so it's hosted by John Lovett, who, former Obama speechwriter, he, along with two other former Obama administration officials, John Favreau, who was another speechwriter, and then Tommy Vietor.
Not that John Favreau.
No, different John Favreau. And then Tommy Vietor, who worked in the administration. They started a company, and they've started several podcasts, and Love It or Leave It is John Lovett's specific one. They do it in front of a live audience every week. And then they've also gone on tour. And so they were in Columbus this past Friday night. And so me and one of my good friends went to it. And then I actually also got to see a taping of his podcast at the New York Comedy Festival back in November.
Oh, cool.
In New York City. Because that's the kind of nerd I am. I go to New York to sit in on recordings of podcasts that I'm going to listen to later anyway. But it's just so smart. It's so funny. It's a really, especially in just how depressing a time we can live in right now with this current administration and all the craziness that happens. It's just his podcast focuses on really, it's very lighthearted, very fun, very funny. He has guests every week. They play games. They have a segment called Okay Stop, where they'll play a clip of someone saying something crazy, like on one of the cable news shows or something. And they'll just, like, as the clip is going, say, okay, stop and talk about it. They have something called a rant wheel where there's different topics. It's towards the end of the show and they'll just rant about a topic, may or may not be political, but it's just a lot of fun. It's a good weekly listen, especially to both get you caught up on news of the day while also keeping you informed. 'Cause their whole purpose is to motivate people to get involved, to stay informed, and to make positive change in, again, what's a very difficult time for those of us who are not fans of this current president.
Is there anybody that is? Okay, anyway.
I doubt they're listening to this show. They may be, and that's great. We're not fans, but, you know, we're all fans of movies, and that's what brings us together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Focus on unity.
Right.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway.
All right, well, great. So what's the... So it's... The name of the podcast is...
The name of the podcast is Love It or Leave It, and spelled L-O-V-E-T-T, because that's his name.
Gotcha.
But they have several podcasts. One is called Pod Save America. They also have Pod Save the World. They have a podcast called Keep It. It has a lot of really, really
good
stuff.
They got a big network.
Yeah. I mentioned Love It or Leave It, one, because it's my favorite, and two, it's a recommendation, and he is... he's an adorable gay man whose heart I'm desperately seeking. So maybe if I put this out in the universe, I actually made a poster for the podcast because I'm a nerd. And it just said, love it. Why won't you date me? He did not acknowledge that.
No acknowledgement is not a no.
Exactly. That's what I've been telling myself.
All right.
Ever since. What about you, Mike? What's your recommendation for the week?
So mine is a podcast.
Traitor! You always yell at me for recommending
I'm
podcasts.
Kidding.
Oh. Asshole.
So
You got me.
I got you.
You got me.
Mine is actually kind of a two-parter. So there is a documentary film that just came out on May 4th called RBG.
Oh yeah, I want to see that.
I want to see that too, but it's not playing anywhere here in Columbus.
I think it's coming to the Gateway. I thought I saw a poster for it there.
Maybe it's coming, but so far there are no. So the first part of this is I just want to hear from anybody that's listening that maybe have been able to see it where they live. Let us know what you thought. I'd love to hear some thoughts on it. But
Mike, you're recommending something you haven't even seen.
I'm getting there. So I saw the trailer and a clip for it. So I'm recommending that you check out the trailer, and if the movie is playing where you can see it and tell us what you think. But the real part of this is that so on the day that we are taping this, it is my husband's birthday.
It is.
And so I got him a book. He's been really into... So first of all, he's an attorney. He worships at the altar of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and he's also been really getting into yoga. So I found a book called The RBG Workout.
Oh my gosh.
And it is written by her personal trainer, and she wrote a foreword for it, but it's illustrated. Somebody illustrated Ruth Bader Ginsburg doing all of the exercises.
This is outstanding.
And it is fantastic.
I love... Okay, my favorite part of this is how stern her face is.
Right?
And it's the exact same facial expression in every... I wish I could be this stone-faced when I work out. I look... Oh, my God. This is everything.
So, I was pretty excited to find that. And it's been all I could do to hold it for as long as I have and not give it to him early.
Does he know?
Yes, he's already open.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
This is... Oh. I'm stealing this. This is great. That's awesome.
But so between the trailer and the book, I figured that would make a good recommendation.
Yeah. I'm doing my part. I send RBG multivitamins every day. with a, along with, I have a little motivational quote inscribed on each pill, you know, so.
Anything we can do to keep her around.
I know, like, oh, yeah, yeah, keep it up.
So, anyway, that's mine for this week.
Yeah, that's a great recommendation.
All right, everybody. So that's our show for this week. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Real Gay and Instagram at Real Gay Movie Show. Like our page on Facebook. Wherever you listen, iTunes, Stitcher, Google, YouTube, whatever, please subscribe and give us some feedback. In fact, we are calling for all of you to send us some questions and feedback. We'd love to read what you guys have to say here on the show. So you can make comments on any of our social media sites or on the podcast pages themselves. You can also send us emails at realgaymovieshow@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, and you may even hear your comment or question read on the show.
Or you can, you know, do what so many are doing nowadays with me and send me stuff on Grindr.
Grindr comments are welcome.
Yeah. And as you, if you follow our Instagram, as you see, I will post it. And honestly, I won't call you out, but if you want to post something on my Grindr, I will share it with the world on our Facebook page. So feel free to do that.
All right. So, hey, that is it for this week. Have a real gay day, everyone.